welcome to Share Talk, and I've got the pleasure of speaking with Regency Mining's Andrew Bell. How are you today, sir?
I'm very good, Steve.
Right. It's been an interesting few months. Obviously, Share Talk had you at their presentation event in Birmingham, which was very well received.
Yeah.
And you presented on your Rosa mine at that point in time, but you still had sort of due diligence to do. And you still had a lot of background work and research there to do. So could you give us a brief update on what's happened since then to what's happening now?
Well, as we say, lads, we did that due diligence. We completed that transaction, and we have for 20% interest in the company that has the Rosa mine. That's the 135-tonne per hour preparation washing plant on the site. So what we've been doing is we've been making some progress with preparing to start mining that. We have a drill, an auger drill now on site, and we have also looked into and decided to get a high waller, and the high waller will then have the auger attached, auger drills attached to it, so that it will be able to which a high water can, three times as far as a straight auger. And so that sort of modification of the auger will enable us to get three times as much current. And in order to get that going, we have just delayed by maybe a couple of weeks, 2 weeks, drilling, because the auger on site, we could have started that. Because there's no point drilling a hole and going in 300 feet when you go in 1,200 feet and get three times as much coal. So we were very thrilled to have found a drill that is perfect for our purposes there with an operator, to have got a good rate on it. And we're also washing some coal for third parties in preparation for having our own stuff.
Right. Now, obviously, you and Steve share some, I've put a few sort of facts and figures out there, and that's done obviously via Share Talk. And you've just touched there obviously on the coal washing that's been going on. What sort of tonnage have you been washing up to now?
Before we start producing, is to our costs. We could just run the washing flat out, washing coal, and probably at the moment, you know, it's rated at 125 tonnes per hour. Probably at the moment you could do it at 80 tonnes per hour. We have some new impellers in that have been ordered. We'll be able to get that up to about 100 tonnes an hour, we expect. But to run it like that on other people's coal, the washing, on the whole, the coal they're going to send us may not be as clean as our coal, and therefore there'll be more abrasion on conveyors and so on, more wear and tear. Also, we can't enter into long-term contracts, because why would we take up the capacity of a preparation plant with long-term contracts for washing coal and just getting, say, $8 or something, when in a short period we'll have our own coal where we can make a much greater margin by washing it. So we're sort of being quite picky, but what we want to do is just to cover the running costs and everything for a short period, and kind of run in the wash plant, preparation plant, which after all has been out of action for a while. But it's worked.
Effectively, you're letting the plant run to see where its quirks and traits are, upgrading the system before you start putting your product through.
Yeah, we've replaced some pipes and a few things like that. There's always things to be done, and when you bring anything into production, any piece of machinery, you think you just switch it on and it works perfectly, but it doesn't. You know, it doesn't work like that. We are using this time, very valuable time, to tune everything up that is working.
Right. So, obviously, you commented there that you've got the auger on the site.
Yeah.
What sort of downtime are you expecting to relocate the highwall system after the first sort of 1,000 feet is completed?
Well, we have the auger with a triple 16-inch head on the site, and we're going to fit that head onto the and then we'll be in a position to go. And while I'm at Java on Monday and Tuesday, we'll have people down there from our group, our consortium at the site, who'll be dealing with some of the practical issues. But within the first quarter of this year, in fact, we hope within February, we'll be in producing real volumes of coal.
So, in regards, obviously, to the output between the two systems, the auger versus the high waller, what is the sort of output speed-wise in regards to the two different ones? Is it any slower?
You probably get three times the daily production from the high waller auger. And I'm not going to suggest that the high waller is one thing and the auger is something completely different, because actually there will be an auger drill attached to the end. But instead of it being an auger all the way into the tunnel, pushing in, you have beams that you attach like lengths of rod, vertical drill hole, one another, each one of which has its inbuilt conveyor back. And therefore, the stress of turning that circular motion of the vibration and the potential deviation from a true line is only happening at the tip instead of along the whole length, which is what means you can't go beyond about 300 feet with a simple auger, because the pressure on vibration and the potential deviation from the line you want builds up with distance.
Right. In regards,
in three times as far, and you can produce as of three times the speed, and we'll also expect that we will get out a higher proportion of the coal.
Okay. Now, having a look at the systems that are in place and out there, it's sort of widely regarded that the general output of that piece of equipment is between 40,000 to over 100,000 tons per month, dependent upon the seam width?
Well, we'd like to be able to get 1,500 to 2,000 tons per day with a high wall auger. It should be possible to get 1,500. Whether it can do that, we shall see. That would be one shift. With a 125 ton per hour running at 100 ton per hour wash plant, if we produce a lot, we aren't going to be able to ensure that. The question is, heat to wash. If we're bringing out really clean coal, and we have customers for that coal, which is low ash to start with, then we can sell the whole thing and sell it at a lower price on a pickup system. But if we wash, we lose about 20% in fines, a bit of that, and maybe reduce our ash from just over 4% to 1.8%. We get a slightly higher price, but we'll feel our way as we go along in order to optimize this. Not everything necessarily will go through the wash plant. Some we shall just sell, but there are different customers.
Now, in relation to the fines, obviously a lot of people see any sort of subsequent loss of product as a negative thing. Is there a market for those fines?
Well, different customers have different tolerances. For example, the customer that probably pays the highest price wants a very specific product, and we would need to be very sure we could produce that so everything was running smoothly. So to start off with, we're going to be taking the simplest contract we can from a customer that will pay us a good price, but we'll pick it up, and we may not even need to wash. And then when we know that everything is going, we can try to meet the higher specification, higher price contracts.
Okay.
All that will happen quite quickly, but it is a process. And so anybody who does sums and says, well, you can produce this with the high waller, and you can get this price to your best customers, and therefore in a couple of months, we should be showing this revenue. It isn't, of course, going to be like that, because you have to make everything work properly. You have to work, gain by your experience, and tune up the engine as you go, so to speak.
Yes, and it is a very dynamic process in
In your knowledge, and you improve the way you do things. And we've been through this process elsewhere and seen it with our partners elsewhere. So we fully expect that no one's going to happen. So we're not going to be giving people updates day by day on whether the impellers have arrived and we've gone from 80 tons per hour at the wash plant to 100 tons per hour. But the big picture, we'll be able to give people a good idea of progress as we go. And when we have information, we'll release it once we have good figures.
So in relation to the startup and optimization, what sort of allowances you made for sort of servicing, maintenance, and sort of any breakdown lines? And obviously that's in the short term, and then obviously the longer term.
There's something that we think can be done rather than put in the optimal. Now, so we put in something over 100,000 tons per annum production. It's possible, you know, theoretically, given the capacity of the high wall and everything, it's possible that we could be over 600,000 tons per annum production. But we, the mine in under previous operators within the past decades has not run at that level. And so until we fully understand how we're to do it, we're not going to forecast that sort of thing. So it'd be a nice surprise if it happens. But the same team here that is involved in this is also, through Red Rock Resources, involved in the Chifley mine using manganese in South Africa, where we have seen the production come on. It's a new mine, initially under a million tons a year, expected to the end of February this year, up to 2.4 million tons, with a forecast of 3 million tons for the next year, and maybe 3.6. Now that's a formidable logistical exercise, producing and moving and selling that quantity of material. So you can do the numbers on paper and it looks easy, but in terms of the personnel to run it, it becomes more than arithmetically more complex as you increase arithmetical production. And so we are aware of that, we know how it's to be done, we're just going to make the best progress we can. This year should be a very satisfactory one, because we'll be going from something and from nothing to something. And whether the something is what we forecast something or much better, we don't know.
Now, the initial figures that I put out via Steve Shares and Share Talk last week, I worked out conservatively 200 days worth of production at $100, and then obviously the 20% agreement that you've got in place. I worked the revenue to be roughly sort of 7.5 million. Now, in relation to where your market cap is currently, that shows a massive potential upside in quite a short period of time.
Yeah. Now, these are all models.
Yes.
As we know, there's one kind of science, which is proper science, and there's another kind of science based on models, of which economics is one example, so-called climate science is another.
Yes.
And all those forecasts always turn out to be rubbish. And all business school type forecasts, when you make an investment, also turn out to be rubbish. So we don't know in what way it's going to be rubbish, but we know that whatever's forecast will be wrong. For example, 200 days operation, that's probably way too conservative. I mean, these people they do mine. There's no reason why one shouldn't be mining 24 hours a day and only taking Christmas Day and Boxing Day off and one or two holidays like that. we will, of course, be governed by all sorts of constraints we will find as we move along, and we don't know what those constraints will be. You come up with something which is based on reasonable assumptions on everything, and a very conservative assumption on working days, and you get to quite big numbers. My suspicion is that to start with, our margin will be less than optimal, because we will be making compromises, like not washing the stuff. selling it in its run-of-mine state and so on. And on a pickup basis, there will be a net back for the transport costs. So whoever's picking it up will take off the transport costs and a bit for administration. And as time goes by, our margins will improve. So there will be all kinds of variables. But yes, you're right. Basic profitability looks extremely good.
Okay. So in relation to revenues going forward, based upon your hopes and expectations of the new equipment being put into place and obviously future offtake agreements and things along those lines, when do you expect to see some sort of revenue paid? And obviously in the RNS it states that 50% of the revenue will be distributed to Regency Mines every quarter. So does that mean, for instance, every £100,000 will receive £10,000, i.e. 50% and then 20% of that joint venture?
Well, see, if you look at the value of any investment, classical theory says that the value of an investment is the discounted value of all future dividends or revenues from that investment. And so we said, let's make this simple. Let's have as our base case that we pay money out and have that agreement. If we look at it and we find at a particular point, however, that we can make an investment on which the return is going to be extremely good, and the shareholders will think we're justified in doing that, and maybe we do something to that will expand the business rather than making a payout. But I think with the early production, it will be very important for us to take some payouts, because once we have paid our initial costs of investments and so on, once we've got that back, then we have done something to reduce the risk to shareholders and get a return. And from that point on, we will be looking to expand the business. But I think we want to get return of capital quite early.
Obviously, you touched there on sort of return of capital and bringing on other projects online. Will you be utilising this money to further your other projects, for instance, Mosfell, and or are you looking for additional sort of income revenues, for instance, like Rosa Mine?
Mosfell, we'll no doubt have news on fairly shortly. Looking at opportunities in the coal sector in America. Now, you know, Virginia, Kentucky, Alabama, this is like Mayfair and Park Lane on the Monopoly Board, as I tell people. These are the best addresses for coal. And if you take the areas that produce high-grade metallurgical coal, there's not that much of it in the world, you know, and there's only a few addresses that produce it, and it's very, very valuable. And we have the highest quality coal. If you look at the characteristics of the coal we have at Rosa, and you describe them to anybody, they'll just say, wow, because you don't find many coals like that. So if we can find other coal opportunities of similar potential out there, then we're interested. In the past, people have looked at these opportunities, and they've always been worried about the environmental, in particular, you know, tailings ponds and things. And under the last administration, it's becoming tougher and tougher. I think the EPA's hand will be taken off the coal industry to some extent under this administration, but also because we're producing metallurgical coal instead of steam coal, we won't be producing a lot of waste material. We don't have a lot of ash. And if we get people to take it on a pickup basis, let's say 4% ash and with a certain amount of fines, rather than wash it and get down to 2% ash and maybe put the fine in the settling pond and then take them out and dry them, then we're actually, every time a truck leaves with our run-of-mine material, they're transferring that problem somewhere else. We think that in particular at Rosa, that's looking quite controllable and quite good, and we know that if we can find other high-grade metallurgical coal projects, we can limit the environmental exposure that has been the disincentive to some people investing in this area. And the basic mathematics, the cost of production against the cost of sale, are extremely good. And because this has been a center for steel industry and so on for a long time, and because it has the infrastructure in place, the waterways, the railways, if we can start operating there as the market recovers and as steel demand improves, we can make a lot of money. And after all, look at the policies that Trump has. He's going to emphasize infrastructure, which America needs money spent on. That means demand for steel. And he wants it to be U.S. steel. And U.S. steel is naturally going to use U.S. coal, metallurgical coal. If you look at the two pipelines he's just authorized, he's emphasized they should use U.S. steel. That means U.S. metallurgical coal. So we're in the right sector, in the right place, at the right time, the right margin, just coming into a recovery phase. And I think, frankly, if Hillary Clinton had won the election, then the environmental pressure and the sort of hostility against coal, primarily directed against steam coal for power stations, but also the blowback effect on metallurgical coal demand, that would have continued to be a worry that would have kept capital prices down in this sector. But we are absolutely, every time we look at it, we're more confident this is the place to be. And yes, you know, we do see opportunities. You will hear from us shortly about them. I'd be disappointed if by the end of this year we didn't have three coal mining operations in America. I don't mean exploration, I don't mean development, I mean mining.
So full on production, hopefully yeah. a lot more coal assets in the...
And scaling up to bigger things.
Okay. What is the story, obviously, at Motzfeldt? Have you, or are you expecting to find sort of uranium deposits there, given its proximity to another company's assets called GGG?
Well, it's only a very small part of that license that has been explored, and quite an inaccessible part. And it's the nature of these alkaline deposits that they have a lot of different zones in them with different mixes of those residual sort of minerals. And so certainly there will be areas where we will have uranium there. We don't know where, but I'm not sure that's going to be a major factor. We know we have tantalum and niobium and part of them. We'll have some rare earths. We have found manganese on, molybdenum nodules on the surface. And that's quite interesting to see what the implications of that are. But it's a large area, it's early stage of exploration. It's probably too big and too out of our comfort area for us to do without a partner. And because we're a small company with a small capitalization, we really are looking, in order to leverage ourselves up, at production and revenues at the moment. if we want something that, you know, is big, and has exploration upside, we've also got Papua New Guinea and the nickel cobalt there. These are big projects, all of them, but each of them can, you know, absorb huge amounts of money if we're not careful, and we simply don't have that. So we are looking for partners to take that forward.
Yeah. So obviously looking forward, you've got Westport. And will you be looking to sort of invest further into that?
Well, again, we've just come out with a new presentation, and I think we've advanced that presentation in relation particularly to Westport, but also to some extent with Rosa, both in the presentation we gave the weekend and the presentation that's now up on the website. So there's more background and people can see. And the Westport story is exciting. That's coalbed methane in Oregon. And there's a secular, I think, uptrend in the price of gas against oil in the United States, and there's a possibility of them exporting gas. There's also a special market in Oregon, because the comparator that sets the prices is not Henry Hub, which is normal for the United States. It is the cost of gas piped from Canada. And so you get a premium over Henry Hub. Here we've got five wells already drilled, just waiting for completion, a few yards from a pipeline. And those are going to be the initial ones, which are raising the money and listing, which is going to be imminent, we think, Westport will be doing. But if it works, then that can be expanded to 300 or 400 wells in for time, and carbon methane sales will be will grow and grow and make this quite a big company. So we're in at the bottom. The price, the valuation where we put money in is a fraction of the money that we spent in this historically before it went into insolvency. And so buying things out of insolvency or out of the depths of recession when they're not fashionable, we thought was the good way to go, and the opportunity that the bottom of the market at the beginning of last year gave us. And we've taken that opportunity, and already it's beginning to look right, and I think over the course of the next year, it'll look righter and righter and righter.
So in relation to all of your assets then, you've got Rosa, obviously your near-term focus. What is the sort of medium and long-term aim for Regency Mining? And what asset do you think has got the biggest potential?
I mean, look, I saw how quickly things can turn around. I've seen it in other commodities. But if we get in properly to these fields near the bottom now, we've already got a footprint there and we're starting. But if we build on this, this is the time when billion-dollar companies get made by doing this at the right time. And our aspiration must be to try to grow the company to be a billion-dollar company by moving fast. So we have to get to the right area at the right time. I think we've done that. Have some cash flow to give us support, and then have the aggression and the judgment to choose the right things. And so we ride the growth, the improvement, and the build-up of one or two good mines, and we become a big company. Remember that if a mine works well, it very quickly becomes a very valuable property. If we look again at Red Rock's investment in the Jupiter mine, where we have only a small stake now, that has gone from nothing 5 years ago to being worth $3 or $4 billion, you know, and potentially could double again over the next 3 or 4 years.
So,
you know, coal is the big markets are iron ore, coal, to some extent manganese, and then my precious metals, gold. All the other metals are rounding errors.
So, I've got no more questions for you there. Is there anything you would like to add at all?
No. You know, it's been an exciting beginning of the year, and we're going off to the Indaba conference in Cape Town over the weekend, and we'll be a few days away. And we'll catch up with what everyone else is doing and thinking. And I think that will help us energize our thoughts. Reset. Also, we expect a lot of progress on the ground in coal country while we're away next week. That may well result in us having something to say. And as for the other things you've mentioned, for example, Motsford, well, watch this space. And what you haven't mentioned at all is our investment in. We're small investors there, but things are happening at Brockham next door, where Angus have been drilling.
Yep.
Will be happening at this first quarter at Horse Hill. And it's interesting. We invested there at the beginning of last year. Every transaction since has been at a capital value more than twice the price that we invested at. And so that gives us options, either to remain or to come out and use that money elsewhere. But I don't think there's going to be a shortage of news in relation to Horse Hill over the next few months as well. So we've got the coal, we've got Westport, and we've got Horse Hill with things happening. And as I say, I think there'll be developments with Mosfeld and maybe with the nickel.
Well, with all of the assets you've got, I hope you get frequent flyer miles.
Too many of them.
Well, as long as you're not flying first class all the time, I'm sure your shareholders will be happy.
When we pay, it's economy or premium economy.
Right, sir. Thank you very much for your time today, Andrew. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Bye.